Okay, we're beginning here on the bottom of Samach Gimel Amud Bet. The Gemara is discussing the Machloket as to the psukim that are found by a Shomer Chinam, that we had two sets of psukim, one that describes the cases, Ki teni shoreu kesef ukelim nishmor v'gunav mibeit ha'ish, im yimatzei ha'ganav yishalem shnayim. And the second part, im lo yimatzei ha'ganav. Everybody agreed with regards to the second set of psukim, im lo yimatzei ha'ganav, that was talking about a scenario where it's Toein Tanat Ganav. The question was about the first Pasuk, whether that was also speaking about Toein Tanat Ganav, or was that speaking about a regular Ganav? So the Gemara is going through, based on those different interpretations, those two different Braitot, as to what that Pasuk means, how do we learn out different items of the necessity for having two Pasukim? So over here, we're up to the point where the person who says that both Pasukim are speaking about Toein Tanat Ganav, then how does he know about a regular ganav that he pays kefel? So the Gemara answered that it's according to Tana de Bechizkiah. We summarized at the end of yesterday's daf that Tana de Bechizkiah is really speaking about the mention of gneva by the machteret. That earlier on in Shmot Perchav Bet in Pasuk Aleph it says, "Im machteret imatzei ganav uka umeit ein lo damim. Im zacha Hashem shalav damim lo shalem yishalem im ein lo v'nimkar b'gnevato." And this is the source, which is im himatzei timatzei biyado gneva. Mishor ad chamor ad se chaim shnayim yishalem. So here it's talking about gneva and you pay kefel. So that'll be the source for the individual who says that the psukim by Shomer Chinam are both speaking about toin tanat ganav. A regular plain ganav that he pays kefel will learn out from the case of machteret. So this is what Tana de Bechizkiah is speaking about. The Braita questions the lashon ha-pasuk. And from that, the Gemara is going to use that as a springboard for trying to understand what exactly the drosha is in the pasuk. So here are two lines from the bottom of Samach Gimel Amud Bet. It says, Tana de Bechizkiah, Yomar Shor Ugneva. You could have just said Shor Ugneva, because it says, Im ha'imatzei timatzei biyado ha'gneva, Mishor ad chamor ad se chayim shnayim yishalem. So the Gemara says, it should have just said Shor Ugneva. Ba'okol bichlau. And that would have included everything. Ilukach, if that was the case, Hayiti Omer, Maprat Mifurash Karev the Gabe Mizbeach, Avkoda Karev the Gabe Mizbeach. So if you only had Gneva and the word Shor, then you would have a problem because Shor, which is a Prat, a detailed item, that item has a particular character or nuance to it, which is the fact that it goes on the Mizbeach. It's something that is Ra'ui to be a Korban. So now you would have thought that the only things that are subject to this din of Kefel are items that are kareiv al gavei mizbeach. So in my yesh l'chalavi, if you had shor and gneva, and that would have taught you that only animals that are kosher to go on the mizbeach are included under this kefel, then what would you have included? You would have included seh. So that would have been included from that limud, from shor and gneva. Kishumer seh, harei seh amur. But we don't need that inclusionary, or that way to include seh, because seh is explicit in the pasuk. Ha, ma ani mikayem. So what am I going to say now? Gneva, the rabot called davar. The gneva includes everything. Because it'll say, yomar, shor, se, v'gneva, hakol bichlau. Because then you would have just said shor and se, and then gneva, and that would have included everything. Because the word shor would have included se. Se is already written. So now what does gneva come to do? It comes to include everything that's there. Anything that you could possibly steal, you'd be chayav, kefil for. Now Tosafot points out that the order of the pasuk is not, the Braita is not following that. The pasuk says, Mishor ad chamor ad seh. But the Gemara here follows the pasuk, or the Braita follows the pasuk, it goes, Shor, seh, chamor, just because of the logic of the inclusionary terms, it makes sense to say seh after shor. The Gemara says, Ilukach, ayiti omer, ma prat mifurash davar hakadosh bibchora. There is a common denominator between shor and seh, which is both items, Akadosh bibchora. Af kol davar akadosh bibchora. And therefore I would include items that are kadosh bibchora. Ma yesh l'chalavi. So what would you have included from things that are kadosh bibchora? What animal would you have included? A chamor. Ukushehu omer chamor, hare chamor amur. That's already written there because you have chamor that's there. Ha manumi kayem gneva, the rabot kadavar. Then gneva must come to include everything else. So Yomar, therefore, would say, Shor, Chamor, Se, Ugneva, Vako Bichlau. And then I would have known that everything's included in this Pasuk. Rasez Ilukach, Hayiti Yomer, Ma Prat Mifurash Balei Chaim. that a common denominator between all of these items is that are livestock. So too, kefil will only apply by gneva if one steals animals or livestock. So then what would you have included in that instance? Other livestock, other animals. That is already included from the term chayim, because it says, mishorat chamor atzeh chayim. So chayim includes any other animal that's alive. So then what would you do with the word gneva? There are both called davar. That would be to include everything. So here's the end of the Braita. What the Braita does, or seems to do, is go through the Pasuk and show you how we're trying to learn from this Pasuk that in a case of gneva, you are chayav kefel. The problem is that the Pasuk enumerates certain items, shor, chamor, seh, and those seem to have at least a common denominator between them, which is that they're all livestock or animals. And if that's the case, then you would only include items that are similar to those that are enumerated here. If that's the case, then the only thing that would be chayav in kefel is livestock or animals. But then inanimate objects, money, other items would not be chayav in kefel. So that's what the Braita seemingly says, is that the word gneva comes to include all of those additional items, because anything you would have learned from the pratim already enumerated there. Meaning that from shor you would have included seh, seh is already written. From shor and seh you would have included chamor, chamor is already written. From shor, chamor, and seh you would have included other livestock, chayim, balei chayim already written. So then the word gneva must be coming to include everything besides those items that are already enumerated, and that would mean everything. But now the Gemara is going to try to understand what exactly was behind this Braita, or what the question of the Braita is. Amamar. Yomar shor ugneva. You'll say shor or gneva. Now over here, already the Gemara is faced with the problem, which is, what exactly or how exactly is the limud working over here? How is the limud working here with regards to a shor and gneva? What exactly is the methodology of limud over here? Shor is a particular item. Gneva is a klal. So now, what exactly are you trying to do if you have a shor and gneva? That's number one. Number two is, if you look at the pasuk says, "Imitzei timatzei biyado ha-gneva, mishor chamor atzeh chayim shnai mishalim." The order of the pasuk is gneva first, and then shor. So the question here is from two perspectives. One perspective is, you're out of order of the pasuk. And number two is, even if you are in order, or if you thought there was an order, what exactly is the method or mechanism that you are using over here? Mar says, Amar Mar, Yomar Shor Gneva, Mikhtiv Shor Gneva. There's nowhere in the Pasuk where it says Shor and then Gneva. Gneva Vishorhu Dikhtiv. It says it just the opposite way around. It says first Gneva and then Shor. Vichi Tema, if you want to suggest, Ilu Ne'mar Kamar, means it's as if it said this. Ilu Ne'mar Shor Gneva. Had it said shor and then gneva, then we would have done this. Ma says umi matzid armat. What would you say here? Ma prat mifurash, have a shor prat v'gneva klal. Wait a minute. All you have here are two items. One is a klal, which is gneva. One is a prat, which is a shor. Now you have a case of a prat uklal. If you were to say that the order is not shor and gneva, but we look at it as if it is shor gneva. Then now you write, okay, it's written shor and gneva, you have a prat, which is a detailed item, a shor, and then you have gneva, which is a klal. That's a prat to klal. The principle of prat to klal means, nase klal mosif ala prat. Then you have a prat to klal, the klal comes to add on additional items above the prat, bitrabalahu kol mile. And it's completely inclusive in that case. So if you just had a prat to klal, you would have included everything. You wouldn't have to have gone anywhere past that point. So what do you want to say now? Oh, we're going to take it literally, the way it's written in the Pasuk. The way it's written in the Pasuk is Gneva Vishor. It says the word Gneva, which is a klal, and then it says the word Shor, which is a prat. From that, how could you conclude that everything is included from the word Gneva? Oma prat mifurash. Or how do you say that it is prat here, and we're going to learn Ke'ena prat? Havalei gneva klal. Gneva would be a general statement or principle. Vishor prat. And shor is a detailed. Klalu prat. Ein bichlal alamashe beprat. When you have a klalu prat, the prat comes to qualify the klal. So you have here, actually, the range of what can be done with a klal uprat uklal. You have a klal uprat, which is the most narrow or limited view of this, which is that the word prat comes and defines what the klal is. So therefore, the prat qualifies the klal and says that the only thing that the klal meant is what is enumerated here by the prat. On the other hand, if you have prat uklal, when you have a prat first and then a klal afterwards, then the klal comes to include everything, because it gave you a prat for an example. And then it says klal, it comes and then includes everything on top of that prat and says that that prat was just an example, but it includes everything. So then that would be a prat uklal. The third possibility is a klal uprat uklal, which is that if you have a klal, then a prat, then a klal, then it's ke'ena prat. It's similar to the prat. So then, in this case here, if you were to read it as a prat uklal, you would have included everything. You wouldn't have to gone past the point of saying, shor gneva, you would have been done already at that point. If it's in the reverse, which it is in the pasuk, that gneva is first and then shor, that's a klal uprat. And if that's the case, shor in midachrin alo, then you would have included only a shor, it would have been the most limited in scope, and it would only include a shor. So had it been a prat uklal, it would have been the most expansive view, and would have included everything. If it is a klal uprat, it would be the most limited view. So Rava comes up with the solution, Tana achayim kasamichle. The Tana is relying on the word chayim at the end, that is a klal. And now we have a klal uprat uklal, which is this middle ground, which is not as limited as a klal uprat, but not as expansive as a prat uklal. So then it's a klal uprat uklal kamerle. Vaha lo domi klal abach or the klal akamo. Wait a minute. When we did this before, the klal uprat uklal, until now, for instance, an example of al kol davar pesha, it opens with al kol davar pesha, and then the latter klal is al kol aveda. So those are items that sound similar. It's al kol, it changes the word davar pesha or aveda, but either way, they sound similar, or they're of a similar nature. Or, if you look back at Meisur Sheni that we looked at yesterday, it says, B'chol asher tish'al nafshecha, B'chol asher taveh nafshecha, that was the opening one, and then it closed with B'chol asher tish'alcha nafshecha. So, there you also have a very similar opening klal and closing klal. Over here, you have a very different opening klal and closing klal. The word gneva is all-inclusive. That's a real klal. Chayim, it is an inclusive term, but it is limited to Balei Chaim. So now you have a klal that opens and a klal that closes, and a klal that opens and the one that closes is not similar. So the Gemara says that's not a problem. Hatana debei Rabbi Shmuel who dechichai gavna darish klalei uprate. This is according to the shita of Tana debei Rabbi Shmuel. We have no problems learning a klal uprat in this manner, which is that even when the klalim are not identical in nature, they still view it as a klal uprat uklal. So now we have the methodology that Rava now suggests that the Braita is using. And what the Gemara now is going to do is take Rava's suggestion and run with it. It's going to reread the whole Braita based on this suggestion of Rava, which is Vahacha Kakashile. This is the question that they are facing. Im himatse timatse lomali. Why do you need the words im himatse timatse at the beginning of the pasuk? Now, the assumption being that himatse timatse is extraneous, is unnecessary, you have a duplicate lashon there, a ribui of some sort, and the question of the Braita, the unspoken question of the Braita is, where is this himatse timatse utilized, or how is it utilized? Now, even though it's never mentioned in the Braita, and that language or that question is even hinted to in the Braita, the Gemara assumes that is a methodological approach of the Midrash Halacha, that many times the Midrash Halacha sets you in motion, but doesn't give you all the details. So then this Braita, it sets you in motion, but doesn't give you all the details of exactly what the question is that it wants you to figure out, or to intuit from the information that it gives you. So here it says that what the Gemara now concludes is that the real question revolves around this im himatse timatse, which wasn't mentioned in the Gemara, lomali. Because yomar shor ugneva v'chayim. So now, using Rava's principle, we'll say that it should have said shor gneva v'chayim v'kol bichlau. And that would have included everything. Because you have gneva as the opening klau, you have chayim as the closing klau, and you have shor in between as the prat. So So that's what now we're using a klal uprat klal as the mechanism for the limud. So then the Gemara says, Ilukein, hayitomer, ma prat mifurash darav davar hakarev legabe mizbeach. Just like shor, which is the prat here, which is enumerated, is something that goes on the mizbeach, then you would think that the only things that are chayav in kefel are items that are put on the mizbeach. Av kol hakarev legabe mizbeach. Ma yesh lahavi. So what would you have included? Had you had the word shor, and you learn from that, darvar hakarev mizbeach, what you would have included is a seh. Alright, now the Torah explicitly says the word seh here, so that's already covered. So ha amani mikayem, gneva, the rabot called davar. So it must be that gneva comes to include everything. So yomar, gneva, vishor, viseh, vichayim. You'll use the klal uprat uklal of gneva, shor seh, and then chayim, vakol bichlal. And everything would have been included. Margen says, ilukain, hayitomer, ma prat mifurash davar kadosh bibchora. There is a common denominator between Shor and Seh, which is that they are both animals that are subject to the din of Bechorah, that their firstborns belong to a Kodesh Baruch Hu, that they are Kadosh. So, Av Kol Davar Kadosh B'Bechorah. So therefore, you only included items that are Kadosh B'Bechorah to be Chayav and Kefil. Mayesh L'Chalavi. So then, what would you have included? Had you had Shor and Seh teaching you that, what would have been the item that you would have included? Chamor. Kshomer Chamor, but the Pasuk explicitly says Chamor. That's something that you would have included in Kedushat Bechorah, it's the Chamor, but that's already written. Hare Chamor Amor. Hare Ha Mani Mikayim. So then what am I going to do? I have Gneva, the Rabot Kol Davar. Gneva must be coming to include everything. Yomar Gneva, it'll say Gneva is the cloud, the opening cloud. Sure, Seh V'Chamor as the Pratim, and then V'Chayim as the cloud afterwards. V'Kol Bechlal. And then you would have included everything. Ilukain, again here, Hayiti Omer, Ma Prat Mifurash Balei Chayim. Here, the common denominator between all the items enumerated in the Pratim here, Shor, Sen, Chamor, are all livestock. And those are Balei Chaim. So there is a common denominator between them, and therefore, Af Kol Balei Chaim. I would have included only items that are livestock, that are animals. Mayesh Chalavi. What you would have included in that point is Shar Balei Chaim. Other livestock, other animals. Shomer Chaim, Hare Chaim Amor. When it says in the Pasuk Chaim, Chaim is already said, or is already told to us, that other animals are included. Han mani mikayim gneva. So then what's the point of the purpose of gneva? The rabot, kol davar, comes to include everything. Therefore, im himatzei timatzei lamali. What do I need the inclusionary term, or the limit of himatzei timatzei, if I could have learnt out everything from the remainder of the Pasuk, which is gneva, shor, se, chamor, chayim. And that would have taught us everything. So that's the nature of the Braita, according to Rava. And that's the question that's embedded in the Braita, which is what's the necessity of im himatzei timatzei. So when we turn over the daf, the Gemara will begin to answer that or deal with that question. There's a major question. You can see it's a very large Tosafot over here that already asks the question of how can the word chayim over here be a klal? Because we understand how the word Gneva can be a klal, a general statement or a general principle, but how could Chaim be a klal? That's number one. Number two is, if you want to suggest here that, okay, Chaim is not as big a klal, it's not as inclusive a term as Gneva, but can still function as a klal, it means all livestock, all animals, there's still a problem. And that is because of the structure of a klal, uprat, uklal. You have to understand what each klal adds in this scenario. So if you have a klal uprat uklal, what you do is if you disassemble it, then let's think about it. If you had a prat uklal, if you just had a prat uklal, that would mean that you include everything. That means when you add the first klal there, the first klal is a narrowing klal. It's a klal that comes to limit what is included. Because had the first klal not been there, you would have had a prat uklal. And that would have included everything. So the first klal comes and limits it to the scope of ke'ena prat. On the other hand, if you had klal uprat, if you just had a klal uprat, that would have limited or narrowed the scope of the first klal to the prat. That means that the latter klal comes to include more items. It's expanding. It's making the klal uprat more expansive. That means that the second klal, the klal batra, is really the klal that is the inclusive term, the one that brings everything in. The problem with that is, what's the klal batra over here? The klal batra is the word chayim. And so now you're really in a bind. Because what the Gemara wants to do is take this klal uprat uklal and include everything. How are you going to include everything? Because the klal batra, which is the mechanism by which you are including everything, is chayim. And inherently, that is limited to balei chayim. So how do you ever get beyond balei chayim if your klal, your major klal, which is the klal batra, is limited by the word chayim? And so therefore, how do we ever get to a klal pratu klal that would include everything? That's the question that is raised by the Rabbeinu Asher Miluniel. He's brought here in the Balei Tosafot and echoed throughout the Rishonim, this question which he asked to the Ri. Heicha sakadatcha de migneva shor v'chayim marbinan kol davar. V'lo yele pratuchlau. D'lovi marbinan minei ele balei chayim. Even if it was just a pratuchlau, which would have been much more inclusive than a klal pratuchlau, you would have been limited by the klal batra, which is the word chayim, to be balei chayim. V'hashta bayi l'rubuye b'klalu pratuchlau tvei mai demashma klal batra. How could you include more than that is inherent in that latter klal? V'heshiv lo ri. So the Ri answers him. Kevin delo masik akate date tzad kedusha bebchora v'karei l'gemizbeach. Im ken, im nem amar ma prat mifurash balei chayim. Nimsa she'en klum b'chlal batra d'chayim yoter mike'en prat. That means that the word chayim over here is not including anything more than what's in the prat. Behold, v'chenu idlan the meimar dechayim klalhu liot mashma kol davar kamo gneva b'menu inyan lechayim mamash neu inyan kol davar. So the first way that the Ri deals with the problem is to say that the word chayim was completely unnecessary. Meaning that when you start out, the Gemara says that we're using a klal pratu klal here, gneva, shor, and then chayim. Well, before we think that shor is limited because it is karev legamim zbeach, we thought that shor included all livestock, all animals. Well, if that's the case, then the word chayim after it is including no more than the word shor. If you just had shor and chayim, you wouldn't have included no more by chayim than you would by shor. So because of that, it's im enu inyan, the balei chayim, tzneyu the inyan, she'enu balei chayim. So that's the way that the first way that the Ri says is that the word chayim, eno chanami, should be limited to balei chayim. But the way that we're using it here, it is synonymous with the ipratim that are there. And that's impossible. Since it's synonymous, it would be unnecessary. If it's unnecessary, we have to do something with it, so we upgrade it. We say that the word chayim is not really balei chayim, it even means not balei chayim. Now that's difficult, because you're taking the word, which means livestock or animals, and saying, oh, it really doesn't mean animals. Alright, we have limudim like that. That's one way that the Balei Tosafot deal with it. The second way is, o nefereish chayim lashon chashivut. That the word chayim doesn't mean livestock, but rather something of import, something important. And that's what it means over here. Don't define it as livestock. You're misinterpreting the word chayim to mean balei chayim. That's not what it means. Chayim means just like something that's alive has significance to it, as opposed to it being dead. So the word chayim means something of significance. And therefore, it has a broader inclusionary term than simply livestock. The Gemara later on today's daf will have a limud that uses the word chayim in that manner, which is chayim means l'hachayehu. Give it life. I mean, make it alive. And we'll see that terminology that's used in later in today's daf in a similar vein, that the word chayim is used to mean something significant or of importance. And then the Ri reinforces what he says by suggesting that if you are right, Rav Asher Miluniel, then all the Gemara would have to say is gneva and chayim. Gneva would be a klal, chayim would be the prat, and then you would have a klalu prat, and you'd be limited to livestock. So the fact that the Gemara doesn't say gneva v'chayim, but rather says gneva shor v'chayim, makes it clear that there's got to be some meaning to chayim beyond livestock, or beyond just a shor. And so for that reason, the Gemara uses the word chayim here as an inclusive term to be a klal, and to include more than simply the word chayim does. Now in the end, we're going to see that chayim is used as a prat, and it's not a klal. And all of this will be washed away, meaning that whatever the Balei Tosafot are doing here is all in the Havamina. But the Rav Asher Miluniel says, I don't even understand the Havamina. That's what the Ri is coming to answer. The Maskana, the word Chayim, will actually turn out to be another Prat along the line here, and won't be one of the Klalim. But at least in the Havamina, the Balei Tosafot wanted to understand, how do you have the word Chayim act or function as a Klal that would come to include more than simply Balei Chayim. Right now, as we turn the Amud, the Gemara says, Ihachi. Shapir Kashle. Wait a minute. If that's the question of the Braita, it's a pretty good question. What's the necessity for the words im himatse timatse over here? Because we could have learned everything from Gneva, Shor Chamor Se, Chaim. We could have learned everything out of that. So when it says Mishum Deit Le Pircha, because there's a problem with that limud. There are both called Davar Mehechin Kamaitele. Where are we including everything from? Michlala Batro. We're learning out of the Klau Batro, the latter Klau. Klala Gufe Chayim Ktiv Be. That latter Klau says the word Chayim in it. Meaning that the Klala Batro, as we explained before, this is really the question of the Rosh Asher Milunil, was once you know this answer of the Gemara, had the Gemara ever have a Havamina before it otherwise? Well, that's the Gemara's answer, is that there's a big problem here. The latter Klau uses the word Chayim, or means Balei Chayim. If that's the case, then you can't get beyond that. The Klau can't include more than it itself is meaning. That Chayim means Balei Chayim. And therefore, even if you have a Klau Pratu Klau, the latter Klau cannot include more than it itself inherently means. And that means Balei Chayim. And that's limiting. By definition, it's limiting. And if that's the case, you wouldn't get past Balei Chayim. You would never be able to include more than livestock or animals from here. And that's why you need Imimatzei Timatzei, because without the Imatzei Timatzei, you would be left with limiting Gneva, or the Chiyuv of Kefil by Gneva, to animals or to livestock. So now, Gemara says, Klalu Pratu Klal, Maika Mahanile, Klala Gufe Chayim Tibbe, Klalu Pratu Klal, Maika Mahanile. So what does the Klalu Pratu Klal do for you that is more inclusive beyond the scope of the Balei Chayim? Ile Atuye Kol Davar. If you're going to tell me it's coming to include everything, HaChayim K'tiv. When it says there, it says the word Chayim, Balei Chayimin, Midei Achrein Alo. Meaning the Klal itself, that's the inclusive term, is saying that you include Balei Chayim and no more than that. Shum Hacha Itzrich Imatzei. And that's why you need the beginning of the Pasuk Imatzei. Ta'amrei, Ta'ashnei Klalot, Tesmichei Adodin Inu. Wait a minute. If you're using Im Himatzei Timatzei, it actually turns out that you have not a Klal Upratu Klal, you have a Klal, and then you have a prat, which is that himatzei timatzei are the klalim, and then the pratim that are enumerated after himatzei timatzei. So instead of being a klal upratu klal, you have a klal, and then the pratim that are mentioned afterwards. So what exactly is the klal upratu klal that you are learning over here? So my says, vashnei klalot tismicha dadininu, amravino kedami marovo, as they say in Eretz Yisrael, kol makom shatam otzeh shnei klalot tasmuchim zelezeh. Anytime you find two principles, general statements that are adjacent to each other, hatel prat binehem, then you should lift the prat that is afterwards and place it in between them. Bidonam bichlal uprat. And then bidan them as if it is a klal uprat, meaning a klal uprat uchlal. Therefore, in our instance, shadi shor ben himatzei letimatzei. You should take the word shor and place it in between himatzei timatzei. So what does that come to include? If you're coming to include balei chayim, chayim nafka. We already learned that out of the word chayim. So now the Gemara is using the word chayim as a prat, because himatzei timatzei are the two klalim, and now chayim becomes a prat. So from the word chayim, that's a prat already, would have known livestock. So then what does the word shor do? It comes to include items that are not balei chayim. V'dorosh hochi. And this is what you should say. Ma prat mifurash, davar hamitaltel v'gufo mamon. Just like the detailed items are things that are mitaltel, movable objects, not real estate, not real property. V'gufo mamon, and they have inherent value. Af kol davar hamitaltel v'gufo mamon. So then, so too, anything that is a movable object and it has inherent value, those would be included. And the Reeve points out that even though before we were limited by the word chayim to balei chayim, that's only true when the word chayim is functioning as a klal. And that is, if you did not have the words himatzei timatzei here, you would be compelled to use the word chayim as a klal, because otherwise there'd be no meaning to all the pratim that are enumerated over there, in contrast or next to the word chayim, which includes balei chayim. So in that instance, you would have chayim be a klal, and gneva be a klal, and then the pratim in the middle would be ge'ena prat to come limit the balei chayim. And in limiting the balei chayim, they would then find a common denominator that would say that this is only true by these specific balei chayim and not all balei chayim. But now, once we've already established that we don't need the word chayim as a klal, because we have imahatzei timatzei, then the word chayim is acting as a prat. In the case that it's acting as a prat, the word chayim comes to include all balei chayim. It's no longer limited. It's no longer qualified by the pratim that are there. And therefore, it can include all balei chayim. And then the word shor, which would then be unnecessary, can include even things that are not balei chayim. So the Rav Asher Milunil again asks the Ri about how come over here all of a sudden the word Chaim doesn't have limitations to it, doesn't limit us to a klal uprat uklal that only includes balei chayim. The Ri answers him because the word chayim is now being used or functioning in a different way. Before it functioned as a klal because we were compelled to use it as a klal, and in that same way that we were compelled to make it into a klal, the pratim must be doing something to limit that. And therefore your most you could include is balei chayim and no more than that. Over here where the word chayim is used as a prat, and the himatzei, timatzei are the klalim, or the ribuim that are used here, then the word chayim can mean its full meaning of balei chayim, and everything about balei chayim. And then when you come to shore, shore would be unnecessary. Shore unnecessary, then you conclude other items. Unlike the case where it was gneva, and chayim were the klalim, and then you had the pratim in between, you can't say that the word chayim included everything, and then shore would include more, or things that are not balei chayim, because over there chayim was the cap, or the limit, to everything that was there, because it was used as the klal, or functioned as the klal there. Gemara says, V'tu, shadi chamor, beni matzei lematzei, letu yemai. Now, that's great. You took care of two things so far. You took care of the word chayim, and you took care of the word shor. But there are an additional three other words that are there. The word gneva, there's the word chamor, and there's the word set. What are you going to do with all those items? So Gemara asks, what are you going to do, first of all, with shor? Shadi shor, beni matzei lematzei, letu yemai. What is that going to include? If you're coming to tell me it's coming to include inanimate objects, Mishor Nafka. We already learned that from Shor. It comes to include, this is the Girsa of Rashi, comes to include things that are Davar Misuyam, things that have Simanim in them. This actually we learned in yesterday's Daf, that there is, according to Rashi, that you need to have a Siman in order to be Chayev and Kefel. It was a little strange, as we noted yesterday, the Balei Tosafot argue on Rashi and say that Davar Misuyam comes to teach you either that you have to have a defined quantity that you are claiming, or that it has to be a whole object, not a half an object. But we saw the Meiri that defended Rashi's position and said this is a case of finding an Aveda. And that you only be Chayav and Kefel where you find an Aveda when it's a Davar Misuyam, when it's a Davar that has Simanim in it, because then you would be obligated to return it. And then when you keep it, you are a ganav when you're toin tanat ganav, and then you're chayav kefel. But it didn't have simanim, where you wouldn't be necessarily obligated to return it. Then if you made a claim of gneva, you wouldn't necessarily be chayav kefel for toin tanat ganav in that instance. That's the way that Miri possibly defends Rashi's explanation. There is, as you see in the Balei Tosafot, itzvarim de garse le limeute. You can see that Tosafot over here has limeute davar she'enu misuyam. He had an opposite girsa, which is to come to exclude Davar she'enu misuyam, something that does not have a siman. So that would be the same as Rashi, it's just the opposite language, which is to exclude something that does not have a siman. Rashi has the rabot et davar misuyam. So now, Tosfot has it disfarim, the garse la'tuye. That would be the opposite of Rashi's gear. So which would be la'tuye davar she'enu misuyam, would be to include something that does not have a siman. So that was an alternate gear so that's brought by the Raivid and others, that they're different gear so as to what it includes. Ihochi. Okay, now you solve the problem. We have something to do with the word chayim, you have something to do with the word shor, and you have something to do with the word chamor. Ihochi se'elomali. What are you going to do with the word se? And the Gemara runs into a dead end at this point, because we don't have anything to do with all of the pratim that are there. Once you tell me that you have himatzei timatzei as a klal, and now you're putting pratim in it, if chayim becomes a prat, then chayim already included all livestock. If that's the case, then shor is unnecessary. So he said, shor comes to include inanimate objects. Chamor is unnecessary. Oh, we'll include or exclude, depending how you read it here, davar misuyam, davar she'enu misuyam. But then I still have seh left, and I still have geneva left. What am I going to do with them? Ela riba umiyet viriba. So what we're going to suggest here is that this methodology of limud does not follow the school of thought of klal uprat uklal, but rather the school of thought, the riboy, miot, and riboy. It's very similar to yesterday's daf, where we saw that the Gemara jumped tracks. It was speaking about a klal uprat uklal, and then all of a sudden it says, kol ribuyehu. Kol is a riboy, because, as we noted there, it's extraneous, the word kol. It was an unnecessary language, and therefore we learned it as a riboy, miot, a riboy. Similarly over here, what the Gemara is suggesting is that this idea of having two klalim, and then a prat afterwards, is not to be learnt as a klal uprat uklal, but rather as a riboy, miut, uriboy. And that we know from him. Ela, ribo, miut, veriba, who? Ketana de Bei Rabbi Shmuel. Similar to the limud of Tana de Bei Rabbi Ishmael, The Tana de Bei Rabbi Shmuel, Tana de Bei Rabbi Shmuel is speaking about in Parshat Shmini, when speaking about the kosher fish, over there it says, Bamayim, Bamayim. There it uses the word Bamayim twice, which are klalim, inclusive terms. He says, Ein ze klalu prat. This is not a klalu prat. Ela riba umiyat uriba. It's learned through the methodology riba miba riba miyut uriba. So the pasuk says there in Parshat Shmini, Et ze tochlu mikol asher bamayim. This is what you can eat from the items that are found in the water. Kol asher lo snapir vikaskeset bamayim. So then again, you have the word mayim again. So you have mayim, which is a general term for all waters. Then you have snapir vikaskeset bamayim, again, all waters. And then you have bayamim u'menechalim. Bayamim u'nechalim are limitations of to what types of water bodies that you require. So then, what he suggests is, don't be done this as a klalu prat, whether that means a klalu prat to klal, or maybe simply a klalu prat, which would limit it to yamim nechalim, but rather learn it as a riboy miut or riboy, which is, mayim is a riboy, then you have the miutim of yamim nechalim, and then you have a riboy again of mayim. So it's riboy miut or riboy, and that would include everything. So that's the way to learn it. So instead of saying that you take the pratim at the end and put it in between and make it into a klal uprat uklal, we say no, you take those miutim at the end and put them between the two ribuyim, and you're making it into a riboy miut riba. Now that we know, we mentioned this yesterday as well, that the difference between a klal uprat uklal, that methodology, or that school of thought that says klal uprat uklal, that means that klal, prat, or the items, those particular items are always qualifying the klal. So therefore, when you have the first klal and then a prat, the prat comes to qualify the first klal. The latter klal comes to tell you, don't just be limited to the prat itself, but things that are similar to the prat, ke'ena prat. On the other hand, the school of thought, a riboy miut to riboy, says that the pratim, the details, are not qualifying the klalim. Rather, they are miutim. They are simply there to tell you that this item and not something else. They come to exclude one particular item. So therefore, when you have riboy miut to riboy, then it comes to include everything, with the exception of two things, because here you have two miutim, which is yamim and nechalim, and that will exclude two items, two particular items that are yamim and not this, nechalim and not this. That's how you would learn it. So in our scenario, that's what the Gemara says. Riba hakol. So that includes everything. My Rabbi, Rabbi kol mile. It included everything. Ihochi kohane prate lomali. In our scenario here, if you've already included everything from imhimatsei timatsei, which is a riboy, riboy, and then the miutim afterwards, then what do you need all of the items that are enumerated? There, shor, chamor, seh, chayim, chade mutei karka. One of them comes to exclude karka. V'chade mutei avadim. One comes to exclude avadim. V'chade mutei shtarot. That's the use of three of them. Three of the items we use. One to exclude karka, one to exclude shtarot, and one to exclude avadim. Gneva v'chayim. So now you still have two words that are left over there. Gneva and chayim. So now we have all these pratim. We dealt with three of the pratim, shor, chamor, and seh. Shor comes, let's say, to exclude karka. Chamor comes to exclude avadim. And seh comes to exclude shtarot. Now what about chayim and gneva? What are you going to do with those words? Likadirav, you're going to use it for rav. Da'amar, achya dekaren ke'ein sheganav. So this goes back to your question. Do we see examples of the word chayim used in this manner? Here's an example of chayim being used the same way that the Ri suggests before. That it means not simply livestock, but rather means to give something significance. And that is, the combination of the word gneva chayim is the meaning of Rav, and this will be tomorrow's daf. Tomorrow's daf will start with the word gufa and discuss exactly what Rav says over here, so we're not going to spend so much time on it, but it is, the Rav damar achil de karen ke'en sheganav, that he has to make alive the principal at the time that he stole it. Which means that when you make restitution, you have to pay for the value of the object at the time it was stolen. So if it goes down in value after the time you stole it, that doesn't mean that you just give compensation for what it's worth today. No, you have to compensate for the time period, ke'en sheganav, at the moment that you stole it. And so what it means is, achya, give it life to the principal, ke'en sheganav, so that it is like the time that he was stolen. And so here the word achya means not livestock or live animals, but achya means give it significance or bring it back to its former glory that it was at the time that you stole it. And so there, this is what the Ri brings as a proof that the word chayim sometimes doesn't mean livestock, it can mean something else. So the combination of gneva and chayim over here teach you that it has to be mechayei et ha-gneva. that you have to bring the Gneva back to its former state or to its former glory. Your question about how do you know then what to do when it comes to a riboy miut, to riboy, how do you know what to exclude? When you're talking about Gena Prat, there's a certain amount of logic. You're looking for common denominators. You're looking for items that are similar between the pratim. And you say if it matches in two ways, it matches in three ways to these common denominators of the pratim. So you can understand what the inclusion is when you say klal uprat to klal. But when you're talking about riboy and miut to riboy, how do you know when you talk about the miutim, how do you know what to exclude? Especially since there's usually not much correlation between the item and the miut that is associated with it. The answer to your question is that there is no necessarily correlation between the item and what is excluded. You just exclude items that seem the most unlikely to be included, that it's left up to svara. It's a logical argument as to what exactly you would exclude from these items. The logic is that you would take the things that seem most likely to not be included. There's no particular association between the miut and the item that is being excluded. You would exclude karka, avadim, and shtarot, which are items that categorically don't fit with other items that are stolen. I mean, land, you can understand the difficulty with stealing land in general. And by avadim, that are hukash the karkot, you can understand the problem. Shtarot, that don't have inherent value. So these are items that you would have excluded because of these miutim, because they don't fit necessarily into the general category of items that are lifted or stolen. All right, now the Gemara moves back to the original machloket between the two braitot, one of which says that both psukim by Shomer Chinam are speaking about Tuein Tanat Ganav, or the other shita that says that the first one's talking about Ganav and the second one is talking about Tuein Tanat Ganav. So now the Gemara says, Ulamanda Amar Chad B'Ganav V'Chad B'Tuein Tanat Ganav, according to the one who says that by Shomer Chinam, one of the psukim teaches you about Ganav, the first one, and the second one teaches you about Tuein Tanat Ganav, V'Ganav Atzmo Nafkele, then he already learns out Ganav Mi Imi Matzei Ganav from the pasuk that's found by Shomer Chinam, Hai Im Hi Matzei Ti Matzei Mai Darish Be. What does he do with the psukim that are found by Machteret? What are they necessary for him? Mibayle Kedrava Bara Ilai. He needs them for Rava Bar Ilai. Dama Rava Bar Ilai Mai Taima Durav. Damar Modeh B'Knas V'Achar Kach Bo Edim Patur. What is the reasoning behind Rav's position that a person who admits to a knas, we know that Modeh B'Knas is patur. So how do you know that if a person is Modeh B'Knas and then afterwards Edim show up and incriminate him, that he still is patur? Dichtiv, because the pasuk says Im Hi Matzei Ti Matzei. Im Hi Matzei Be'edim, if the incrimination happens through Edim, Ti Matzei B'Dayanim, then the Dayanim can impose the knas on him. Prat, that excludes a case, the Mashiach Tatzmo, if the incrimination comes from him himself. So only when the Edim are the mechanism or vehicle for incriminating him, is there a knas. But if the incrimination happens first because of his admission, then the Edim have no bearing on the case anymore. The Edim do nothing besides what he already did, and he already incriminated himself, and therefore you will not pay the knas, because it's only when the Edim are the vehicle for incrimination, do you have a knas? Ulamanda Amar Tarvayu B'Tuein Tanat Ganav. So now, according to the one who says by Shomer Chinam, both psukim are talking about Tuein Tanat Ganav. Dai imi matzei ti matzei mabikle the Ganav atzmo. And he uses the pasuk by Machteret to teach about a Ganav himself. Mashiach atzmo minalan. Has he know the principle of Modeh B'Knas that is patur? He learns that out of the pasuk at the end of the psukim of Shomer Chinam, Asher Yashion Elohim. That only when the Beit Din incriminates him, velo Mashiach Tatzmo, but not someone who incriminates himself. According to the one who says that, by Shomer Chinam, the first one's talking about a regular Ganav, the second one's talking about Tuein Tanat Ganav. And therefore he doesn't need by Machteret to teach about a regular Ganav, and he learns from there about Modeh B'Knas's Patur, Hai Asher Yashun my Darish Beit. What does he do with the pasuk of Asher Yashun Elohim by Shomer Chinam? Amar lecha, hu mi bayale the Modeh B'Knas Patur. I need that for Modeh B'Knas's Patur, because here we're dealing with two levels of Modeh B'Knas. One level of Modeh B'Knas is where the in-person admits to the item, and then he wants to be Patur from the Knas, without any Edim. That's Asher Yashun Elohim. Only when Beit Din incriminates you, or Edim incriminates you, but if you incriminate yourself, you are Patur. This Himatzei Timatzei comes to teach you an additional chidush, that even in a case where you incriminate yourself and then Edim come after the fact, you still are patur. So he has two limudim. The first limud to teach you that when you admit modeh b'knas, you are patur. The second one to teach you when you're modeh b'knas, and then edim come, that you're also patur. Umanda amar tavayu b'tuein tanat ganav. Where's the one who says that both psukim by shom chinam are tuein tanat ganav? So then, for him, he doesn't have himatzei timatzei. He only has the one asher yashiun elohim to teach him modeh b'knas is patur. Kasaver, he must believe modeh b'knas v'char kach ba'u edim chayav. In Ochanami, that if he admitted to something and then Edim came afterwards, he would be Chayav and Knas, because he doesn't have a pasuk to tell you that you are Patur. He only has the one pasuk to tell you that Modeh B'Knas is Patur, but that's in a case when there are no Edim, because that's the lesser of the Chidushim. But he doesn't have a second pasuk to teach you that, even when Edim show up after the fact, that you are still Patur. Uleman damar chad b'ganav, chad b'tuin tanat ganav, danaf galei ganav mehatam. So now he learns out ganav from the psukim by Shomer Chinam. Bishlama im himatzei timatzei l'kederava bar Ilai. You explain to us why you needed himatzei timatzei to teach us this din of Rava bar Ilai, that modeh b'knas and vacharkach b'edim is patur. Aval kohani prate lomali. Okay, that explains the words himatzei timatzei, but after that you have gneva, shor, chamor, seh, chayim. What do you need all of those for? They're totally unnecessary. Gemara says, kedana debei Rabbi Shmuel. That is because of the Tana debei Shmuel. The Tana Rabbi Shmuel, kol parsha shnema v'nishneit. If you have a parsha that is states something, or a law in the Torah, and then is repeated, this doesn't necessarily have to be in order. I mean, you don't have to have the first one, and then the second one is the repetition. It could even be the second one is the core, and the first one is a repetition. All it is saying is if you have the same halakha repeated twice, lo nishneit ela davar shenitchadesh ba. Despite the fact that it's a complete repetition, or what seemingly unnecessary details that are there, that's okay, because the reason it's repeating it is to get you the additional information that's not found in the other scenario. So that's what happened over here. Ganav, we already learned out from Shomer Chinam. Ki tein ish areo kesef okeim nishmar v'gunav v'beit ha'ish im imatzei ha'ganav nishaleim shtayim. So there you learned keifel already by a ganav. Why do I have, by machteret, im himatzei timatzei v'yado ha'gneva nishor ha'chomor ha'tzei chayim shtayim nishaleim? What do I need that for? I already know Geneva from somewhere else. All of that's unnecessary. The answer is no. It's repeating. Why did it repeat? Because there's one additional item we're going to learn out of this pasuk, and that's Himatzei Timatzei. And that's what Tanit Be'er Shmuel teaches us, that many times the Torah will repeat the exact same thing, only for the additional item or the chidush that's there, even though everything else is completely unnecessary or, in a sense, repetitive, and we don't need all those details. Nevertheless, it gives you the whole detail and everything again, just to get you that one extra item. Ve'ema, when it says, ganav atzmo b'shvua. Our underlying assumption so far has been that by a ganav you pay kefel, even without a shvua. Toin tanat ganav needs a shvua in order to be chayav. Gemara says, why is that necessarily true? Maybe a ganav also has to take a shvua before he's chayav kefel. Lo salkadatcha, you can't think that. Titania, Rabbi Yaakov Omer, shnayim ishalim, shalom b'shvua. When it says shnayim ishalim, it means without a shvua. You're telling me it means without a shvua? Oh, einu ela bishvua. Maybe it means with a shvua. Amart lo kachaya. It can't be that way. It's not that way. Amar says, ma lo kachaya. What does it mean it's not that way? Amar abayi lo dichtob rachmana shnayim yishalem b'ganav. Because if you were right about this, you would not need a pasuk to teach you about a ganav that he pays kefel. V'leitevi kal v'chomer mi toein tanat ganav. Because then you could learn it out of a kal v'chomer from toein tanat ganav. This is what the Gemara said yesterday, that, oh, why don't we just learn it out of Toein Tanat Ganav as a Kavachomer to Ganav? The Gemara rejected that because it said, if you did that, the old Avom in Adin, the old Kenidon, that the Ganav could not be better than a Toein Tanat Ganav. Toein Tanat Ganav needs a Shvua. That means Ganav would need a Shvua. Well, that's what Gemara says, exactly that. That's what Abai says. If you learned it out of Toein Tanat Ganav in a Kavachomer, then you would have had Shvua. So if that was the case, you wouldn't need to mention Ganav at all. You could have learned it out of a Kavachomer. Ma toin tanat ganav de behetera atali ade. By toin tanat ganav, where he's in possession of the item in a permissible fashion. Amar krali shalem trey. The Torah still tells you have to pay double. Ganav atzmo de bisura atali ade. A ganav where he gets it illegally. He steals it from the individual. Lo koshukain. Certainly he should have to pay double. And it would be through the mechanism of shvua. Just like by toin tanat ganav you need shvua, so too by ganav you would need shvua. So then why does the Torah have to specify separately that a ganav is chayav kefel? Da'afilu shelo b'shvua. To teach you that even without a shvua, a ganav is chayav kefel. If he's caught stealing, if he's caught with the gneva, he pays kefel, even without a shvua denying the fact. Omar says, im he might say lahachi hudata? So now the Gemara goes back and says, wait a minute, you said he might say, ti might say, we're going to use for this limud, which is, modeh b'knas is patur, or the possibility of, that it is a riboy meal to riboy, is that what it's available for? Hami b'ayalei, it's already been used for a different drusha, the chedetanya, yado, it says there, it's found in his hand. It only when it's found in his hand is he culpable. How do I know if the gneva is found on his roof, in his courtyard, in his backyard? If it's in his possession in any way, he is chayav. So Tosfos Beer claims that the scenario is a case where Kisha b'makel, that he chased it in there and that he pushed it into his property. And since he pushed it into his property, he acquired the gneva, not through picking it up the yado, but rather through pushing it and then his property taking possession of it. And what it tells you here is that your property can act on your behalf to execute on the gneva, and it doesn't have to be biado, it doesn't have to be in your hand. And that's what Tosfot says over here. Ein li ela biado perish ganvo biado mamash. Be'itztich l'rubuye chatzer. So why do you need to tell me that your chatzer works? Lashminun, the chatzer kone af l'chobato. To teach you that your chatzer can work on your behalf, not just when it's for your benefit, not just when it's a zchut, but even to your detriment. D'lo teima k'shliach damyo. Don't say that a chatzer is like a shliach, even though that's what Tosfot thinks. Tosfot thinks that your chatzer, if you remember, here we learned it in Baba Kam, we learned it in Kiddushin as well, that Tosfot believes that chatzer works mishum shlichut. Vein shliach l'dvar aveira. You don't have a shliach l'dvar aveira, then how can your chatzer work on your behalf? K'mash malan t'koneh. That's what the psukim tell you, that over here, your chatzer can work on your behalf. K'dvarish b'kerem makam d'bav metziah. D'yei shliach l'dvar aveira, heicha d'shliach lav bar chiyuvol. There is a shliach l'dvar aveira when the shliach is either not a thinking item, or is not a person who is chayav. Because in that case, you can't ask the question. You should have listened to the Adon, you should have listened to God and not to me. Over here, the object that's working on your behalf doesn't listen to anyone. It's a field, it's a chatzer. So you can't make that claim about Shliach Devar Aveira, and therefore it is a Shliach Devar Aveira and acts on your behalf. This is Tosafot Shita Adam that think that a chatzer works Mishum Shlichut. But even if you think that chatzer works Mishum Yad, right, still over here you have to say that these items work as an extension of your Yad, even to your detriment. Usually we only say that it works to your Zchut, to your benefit, but not to your detriment. This pasuk teaches you, no matter how it gets into your possession, it will be chayav. Now, here the Rishonim discuss in terms of, it may not be enough when you do gneva, if you simply cause the item to move into your possession, usually you need a maaseh. You need some sort of action in order to acquire the gneva. Rashi in Baba Metziah, Dav Yud Amud Bet, says that you need to be na'al bifaneha legonva. You actually have to lock it up in order to steal it. Over here, Tosfot says you need to be hikisha b'makel. You have to hit it with the stick. You have to drive the animal. Although the Rashash questions the Balei HaTosfot over here, he says if Balei HaTosfot are right that it's hikisha b'makel, then he did a kinyan mishicha. He doesn't need to get it into his property in order to be a ganav. He simply has done it through getting it out of the balim's property into a simta. He would have done it through a kinyan mishicha. That's why some say Rashi did not explain like the Balei HaTosfot. Because there he felt that you already made a kinyan, you don't need the chatzer to make the kinyan. The chatzer here needs to be a part and parcel of the kinyan. Rav Chanan Wasserman, the Kovet Shirim, says that the Tosfot's example must, according to the locha, that midoraita mishicha is not koneh, and therefore the mishicha over here is only acting as a maaseh to get you the gneva, but not as a form of kinyan. The kinyan is coming through the im hitzei timatzei, where your property is acquiring it on your behalf. So now the Gemara says, I already used the word himatzei timatzei, how am I learning these other things out from it? Gemara says, imken lemakra, o himatzei himatzei, o timatzei timatzei. It should have repeated the same word twice. Midashani kra, the fact that it says himatzei timatzei, it not only duplicated the language, but changed it in that duplication, shmami natarti. From that you can learn two things. You can learn both the fact that your chatzer and your property can act on your behalf to execute on the gneva, but you can also learn the additional item, which is, according to the Mandamar that says that chad is beganav and chad between tanat ganav, that himatzei tells you that mode beknas vachar bach ba'u edim is patur, and according to the one who says that they're both between tanat ganav, that teaches you himatzei is the riboy, mi'u to riboy, that allows you to include everything to be chayav in kefel. So you have that additional limud from the fact that it says himatzei timatzei. And Tosfot says over here, he says from here we conclude, mashma, the orche dekra lichtov bet pamim tevachat. It's normal for the pasuk to write the same word twice. The fact that it didn't write the same word twice already enters or opens up the possibility that you could have a different limud here. Even though we have a principle that sometimes the Torah is dibra kolashon b'nei adam, that it speaks like people normally speak. That we only utilize, the Rish says, when we have no other choice. But if we have other choices, then we would have a drasha be associated with it. And so therefore the duplication of the language is important in of itself. And then the change of the language adds on an additional aspect which allows us to learn out two things over here. Okay, we're going to stop here by the two dots on the top of Samach Hei Amud Aleph.